John Thain.
On radio, online and on digital.
The Conversation Hour on 774 ABC Melbourne.
And on ABC Victoria.
11:05 and welcome to a Conversation Hour that I've been looking forward to for quite a while. Do we have jobs in the future or careers the way we're used to? What are the core skills that people in the future are going to need in order to be gainfully employed? In fact, are we going through an industrial revolution of a new kind? Is the workforce of the future unrecognisably different to the workforce of today? And what about young people's attitudes to the world of work? Well, what are you finding in your workplace or with your own kids? Or maybe you're one of those looking for work. All of those are very much the area of expertise of our guests in the studio here to discuss this and workshop it with you today. Your calls throughout the hour, 1300 222 774, 1300 222 774, and the text messages come straight to my screen, 0437 774 774. That's the text number. Our experts in the studio today to talk to you about whether or not the robots are coming to take your job are Professor Paul Kaufman and Nicholas Wyman. Paul, good morning to you.
Thank you, John.
From the University of Melbourne School of Business and Economics, where Paul's the dean, you have a particular interest in this area. What is the future of work? How do you see it?
I see it fairly positive. I see it full of promise and full of opportunities for young people. Challenging.
Some young people.
I suspect not. So I suspect what we see, particularly in Australia, borne out by evidence, is that young people actually face a pretty good future, despite the odd gloom and doom that they express.
Oh, look, it's so much better to panic people and frighten them than it is to reassure. So what do you base that assessment on? Because there's plenty of people who think the opposite and say, oh my goodness, we're all to be ruined.
First, a bit of international context. I think youth unemployment is at its lowest, as it has been for quite some time in Australia. Compare that or contrast that with youth unemployment in Europe, where we're talking 1 in 3 or even 1 in 2 young people being unemployed. Whereas Australian youth unemployment is high, it reflects the fact that it is taking time for young people to transition into the workforce. But it is happening, and it is happening pretty much at the same pace as it has for the past 20 to 30 years.
You've got countries in Europe where there's a whole lost generation, as they're actually now described. Do you think we'll never have that in this country?
That's a really tough question, of course. We economists, as you know, are not that good at foretelling the future. I don't see that as an imminent risk. And I'll put one more bit of context on that. If you look at what just happened in Australia, where the mining boom deflated and lots of jobs got lost in Western Australia and elsewhere, it's remarkable that youth unemployment and employment more generally didn't actually skyrocket since then. It's actually quite amazing to think how resilient Australia's economy has been over the past 5 to 10 years.
I'll come back to you in a moment, Paul. Our other guest is Nicholas Wyman. He's a workforce development and skills expert and CEO of an institute called the Workplace Skills and Innovation Institute. He's also written a book called Job You, Find Your Path to a Successful Career in a Tough Job Market, which is a big promise to make, Nicholas. Morning to you.
Morning.
It's a very big promise to say that you will find your path. Now, there are people who get dropped off and people who fall by the wayside. What's the difference between success and failure for young people today?
Well, I think that we have some pretty serious challenges in Australia, and I think that the way we live and the way we learn is definitely changing, and we're going through this rapid change. Now, some education institutions are keeping up with that change, and others are not. And I think that we really need to say, what are the jobs going to be? Where are our industries going to go? You know, we clearly have got challenges in the mining industry, in the resources, in the manufacturing sector. We can make things in Australia, but we can't make them how we were making them. So I think people really need to look at their own skill set and look at the education programs they're entering into and saying, is this going to lead to a job, or is this going to take me where I need to go or want to go? And also, what's it going to cost?
Aren't we spending a lot of money training people to do things that aren't going to be there in the future? Aren't we spending a lot of money creating, well, graduates in areas where there is no work?
Oh, well, I think there's no question that there are certain industries, some white-collar, so-called white-collar professional jobs like law and accounting, where technology is definitely having an impact on those jobs. And I think that some forward-thinking institutions are saying, well, what are the real-world skills that our graduates need? So looking to the US, there's some universities there that are teaching law graduates what I call the strong academics, but they're also learning this real-world workplace skills. And I say, as an employer, someone who employs 600 people in Australia, these are the skills I'm looking for in my employees.
Okay, so clearly people need to be more agile and nimble, to quote the Prime Minister. But, Paul, there are specific things. For instance, we know we're an ageing economy. So we know there are more and more people who are going to be employed looking after those people who are ageing. But we're creating barriers for people to get into that sort of work. For instance, we're making the training for aged care and the like, we're making it harder and harder, more and more expensive, and making it less likely that people can slide into those sorts of jobs. It kind of doesn't make sense, does it?
No, I think you touch on something really important there, and that is the regulatory context. It is not so much the educational institutions which are failing in that respect. I think that governments have got an important role to play in allowing educational institutions to be more agile themselves and to cater for those new opportunities, which you rightly identify in health, similarly education I can think of, where it's been difficult to start new businesses. We'd be interested to hear what Nicholas's experience, for example, was in that context.
We've just thrown billions of dollars down the black hole of private providers of qualifications that turned out to be nonsense. So we've been providing subsidies to, well, in many instances, completely bogus operations to provide useless qualifications to people who will end up with nothing other than a debt for supposedly gaining a certificate that's never going to give them a job. It's just been a disastrous couple of years, has it not?
Well, John, I think talking of debt, I mean, if we look to America, there's some things we can pick up from the US, and we might touch on this model that I came across called PTEC later on, but the student loan debt in the US has just hit $1.3 trillion.
Trillion, that's
now,
with a T.
Now, that's more than Americans owe on credit card debt. That's a serious stack of IOUs. And I think if we look to Australia, you know, we've got different scales. I mean, in Australia, I think the debt is currently $40 billion. And by 2018, it's going to push out to $70 billion. Now, I think that the government has a role to play, and I think that's something we probably agree on, that I think that the government has a role to play. But I think industry has a role to play here too. I mean, it's industry who are saying, we can't find the skills of the people we need. You know, your stats that I talk about in my book, 800,000 people unemployed, yet there's 150,000 jobs that remain unfilled. Now, my organisation I talked about before, we've got 120 apprenticeships. Right now in Australia, we can't find people to take those jobs. So the question, you know, so I ask myself, well, why is that?
Yeah, and what sort of areas are they in, just to fill in
well,
the gap?
Well, they're in areas like automotive, but these are in high-tech automotive. These are working for prestige. Well, let's face it, most vehicles these days, it's not about grease and grime and lying under, you know, having grease dripping on your head. It's actually about diagnostics. And the challenge is that a lot of people who are, you know, interested in these jobs are leaving high school wanting to get an apprenticeship, but they, first of all, they don't know what it's like to actually work in the automotive industry. They don't understand that difference, and they've got a different need to employers. And I think the second thing is once they start, they're missing these basic skills, maths and science. These are the skills that employers want.
In fact, they're called the STEM skills, as my understanding of it. So explain what those are for us, Paul.
Science, technology, engineering, and the medical sciences. I think that's right. I think, obviously, I'm at a tertiary education institution, so it's a bit hard to explain why too few students are opting for a science career or for an engineering career. Perhaps even too often we see engineering students and science students ultimately ending up in finance positions, my own discipline, which seems a bit of a waste in the sense that they're competing for already a very crowded environment for jobs in the financial institutions, financial professions. So it's difficult. It is really hard to encourage students to pick up the STEM disciplines.
1300 222 774. There's a couple of issues here where our experts, Nicholas and Paul, can help you. First of all, there's the what about your kids, or what about if you are in training or emerging from your first set of, and I say first deliberately, your first set of training commitments, because education, we're told now, is a lifelong experience, not one that you just embark on at the start of your working life. So there are people emerging with qualifications that are not necessarily going to help them in the workforce. And then there's people who may be in midlife, and we're getting some messages from people already, are finding that what they first thought would be a career, in fact, has turned out not to be. And in their 40s, perhaps, they're wondering what to do next. Well, I have with me Nicholas Wyman, who's the CEO of the Institute for Workplace Skills and Innovation. He works with industry. He's written a book about it called Find Your Path to a Successful Career in a Tough Job Market. The book's called Job U, as in the letter U. And he's in the studio together with Professor Paul Kaufman, who's the Dean of the University of Melbourne's Faculty of Business and Economics. He does a lot of work around the world with these sorts of organisations, especially the World Economic Forum, looking at the future of jobs. So what are young people's attitudes to jobs? If you're an employer, what are you finding? I have several friends in my own social circle who run businesses saying, well, you just can't get people who are prepared to commit these days to the sorts of things that are required. The kids come in, they want to spend half the day on their phone, they want to spend all sorts of time tending to their Facebook status rather than getting on, doing the job, putting the phone away and getting on with it. How many times have you heard that? Well, how true is it? 1300 222 774. If you're at work right now, well, you can do this on Facebook on The Boss's Time, or you can call in on the talkback, 1300 222 774. Or if you're one of those who's missed out on the workforce, or someone who's looking back saying, thank goodness I got through and I don't find myself affected by this anymore, well, it might be your kids or grandkids are going through with it. Well, our guests are here to help. Paul and Nicholas can answer your calls, 1300 222 774. Quite a few texts, I'll get to those in just a moment. Just one more thing, Nicholas, and another tip from your book. If you're an employer, what are you finding is the most important, the highest priority as you're trying to shape the workforce that you need? Are the kids just coming in the door, or the graduates just walking in ready
word,
to go?
Partnerships. It's all about partnerships. It's very much, spending some time working in the US and the UK. One common theme that I've seen in successful organisations who've got a really good skills building program is they have partnerships. They have partnerships with the local academic institutions at all levels. So in the US, it's community colleges. So in Australia, it would be TAFE. So that's really important. But actually going back to high school, but also we shouldn't discount, higher education. I think that there's a lot of examples in the book where Harvard University and people like Jan Rivkin from the Harvard Business School are commenting about this book I've written, saying some people say, well, it's a book that says don't go to university. That's not what the book says. It says it's about the right education at the right time. And I think for a lot of people, they feel this pressure that they have to go straight from high school to university. And I think there's a lot of programs that, a lot of options that people can take up on the way. Or there's programs that, as you said before, people who are mid-career changers who are looking to brush up or reboot their skills, or they have to. Their industry's gone.
Lots and lots of questions that our guests can help you with. Paul Kaufman from the University of Melbourne and Nicholas Wyman from the Institute for Workplace Skills and Innovation. Lots of text messages already coming through. John, no jobs now, no jobs for later, unemployed for life, full stop, says Kylie from Drysdale. I'm 23 years old, just finished my apprenticeship, started in the class of 25. By the time I finished, there were just three, and our dropout rates, in particular in trades training, is phenomenal. I don't know whether that reflects, Paul, what's happening in other countries too, but we have a very high attrition rate.
Yes, and again, I think that reflects the lack of connect between the education and the skills that they are immediately expected to deploy in the workforce. I think that friction causes a large amount of angst and causes a lot of that attrition that you described.
But why are we so bad at training the next generation of electricians or carpenters or plumbers or whatever? We've managed to do it in the past. Why can't we manage to do it today?
I think there's some missing ingredients. You know, I think the stats are around 50%. I mean, one in two people who start an apprenticeship in Australia, in the UK, in the US drop out. I think in Germany it's often quoted around 80%, but that's come off the boil a little bit. But so what is the difference? Why is it in Germany that the apprentices are getting, or in Switzerland, are getting to the end of their programs? And And I think a bit of it is very much, you know, the curriculum and the way that things are being taught. And I also think we need to freshen up a lot of parts of the apprenticeship model. Apprenticeship served us well in Australia, but I think we need to freshen up.
Robert Andromana, first caller, and our guests Paul Kaufman and Nicholas Wyman are in the studio for you. Robert, good morning to you.
Good morning. All right, I'm just going to start with a couple of things. With people changing their mind when they start courses, with the Centrelink, you've got to upskill. So if you've already done a Cert 2 in something, you can't do a Cert 2 in something else. I also think it's not what you know, but who you know. And also, those dodgy certs, it also gave me, I did one of these in Cert 3, Conservation Land Management. It also gave me skills, didn't go anywhere. It was dodgy, they shut them down. But it also gave me skills for when I joined the workforce. Also, on the apprenticeship one, I tried doing a 4-year apprenticeship with electricians, but on mature age, but I was only getting $412 a week, so I couldn't, it wasn't sustainable for myself.
Well, but, so because you started later, do you think you should get paid more just because you're older?
Yes, but also I can do more. See, I've got my own transport now, see, than the younger person would. Or I've got more skills because I've already had been in the workplace.
So did you finish your electrical training, Robert?
No, I only did it for 2 weeks because it wasn't manageable. I was trying to rent a house, you know, I was travelling long distance, trying to pay rego, living off $412 a week wasn't manageable.
It's such a common tale that we hear over and over again. So there, Nicholas, there's a bag of issues.
Yeah,
that
so
up.
So I think, Rob, what I'd say to you is I think stand back, have a look at it all and say, what makes me happy? What is it you really want to do? So there's a lot of, you know, specifics. It is tough to live on apprenticeship wages, but I also think you've got to say, if you can look at it as a learning wage, and there are a lot of subsidies. But the training system is complex. There's a lot of rules and regulations state by state and around the country. But, you know, I think it's really about finding what is it that you want to do.
And at the same time, Paul, we're going to end up with skills shortages, which is going to affect the labour market if we continue to have such high attrition rates. Robert's the classic example, starts out on electrical training, finds it's not what it was going to be, drops out after 2 weeks, and there's another apprenticeship not completed.
We see that, and we see it reflected in the skill set that gets you an immigration place in Australia, because there are definitely areas where we're simply unable to fill the positions that are out there.
Nick in Cranbourne. Robert, good luck, I should say, before we let you go. Nick in Cranbourne. Morning, Nick.
Morning. How are you going?
Good, welcome.
You might have just touched on it there, but apprenticeship wages, I think that's they're so low, and I don't think they've kept in line with the modern times, and I think that actually puts a lot of young people off that they can earn $7 or $8 an hour, even though it's a means to a good end. I think the wages are far too low. My son's a friend is an electrician,
yep,
30 year, and he's older, he's 23, but yeah, the wages are so low, and they around the third year and the fourth year they start doing work that most electricians would do anyway, for example.
Yeah, but they're still on apprentices' wages. But, Nick, so many apprentices now, you get a subsidy through the parents because they're so keen for their kids to actually finish the course, don't they?
A subsidy through the parents, did you say?
I mean, for instance, I'm not an official subsidy, but, you know, you say to the kids, look, I just want you to finish your qualification, I'll pay your rent or something in order to encourage them to finish the course.
Oh, of course, and I've done that in other ways, but I still think that for someone to leave school and go into a job to get paid, you know, $7.48 an hour is, in this modern day, is ridiculous, especially when those businesses, full-time carpenters and electrical companies, charge the prices that they do.
Okay, but of course the problem will be, and I'm sure Nicholas and Paul are going to jump in on this, that if you put up the wages for apprentices, then the employers will say, well, that's it, we can't afford to take them on.
Well, I think one thing that's going on, the number of apprentices in Australia has actually dropped by 200,000. Wages are killing us in this country. Wages are making us not competitive. So I think we need to look at ways to support young people, but I also think we need to look at the term of apprenticeships. To me, the term of apprenticeships is a big one. It's 4 years. That's a long time. It should be more 2 years or based on a person's competence, and that would also help out young people. I think if they could see the end in sight quicker, they'd be a lot more keen.
So 2 years apprenticeship and what, something after that, that's what, a probation period where you're on wages?
Well absolutely, and I think you need to get into this idea of lifelong learning. Don't stop with an apprenticeship. So advice to your son or daughter is keep going, see where it can take you, and constantly brush up and reboot your skills.
And things are changing so fast. Paul, is that what other countries are doing?
That is what other countries are doing. And so I totally concur with what Nicholas just said. I'd just add to that, I think, is that to achieve the shorter term for the apprenticeship, you've got to bring it into the education part. So you got to start earlier with the apprenticeship. So in that sense, you wouldn't be losing time. You wouldn't be perceiving so much the loss of income over that time period.
Making kids finish school before they start an apprenticeship used to be, you know, you'd start your apprenticeship when you were 15 or 16. Mm. And so you'd be qualified by the time you're in your 20 or early 20s.
The way we see that at university, where we're talking internships more, is that we got to bring that into the curriculum. So rather than pushing it out and expecting that that happens after the formal qualification has been obtained, it's too late and you run into these problems of wages.
Heaps of texts and a full board of callers. I'll get through as many of you as I can. On Facebook, JohnSkid6 says there are no jobs now. Try being unemployed in your 40s with only retail experience. Corporate retail only want to employ under 18s because they're cheaper on the hourly rates. I'm starting to think it's more effective to just fold my applications into paper planes and throw them out the window. Kerry Pilkington's written on Facebook, computers already did that. There's now self-checkout at your local library, replacing librarians. Nick Costello says, judging from past experience, there's a good chance we don't know the extent of this problem until long after it's swallowed us up. Interesting perspectives. I'll get to your texts in a moment as well, but let's get David from Geelong to air. Morning, David.
Oh, hello, John. Look, what I wanted to say was, being a design technology teacher, or as you probably know, a woodwork teacher or one of those in the past, I've noticed that there is less money around to spend on facilities at schools, and we're getting teachers coming through who have no industry background. And as you know, in your days at school, the teachers that inspired you to teach, they were the ones...
You still there, David? Hello, David? David, don't go away.
Sorry, John.
I think you might have hit the mute button. Keep going. The teachers that inspired you were which ones?
I teach design technology, and I'm an ex, which it's the old trade teacher, you know, woodwork teacher.
Yep.
And what I'm finding is they're cutting back on the money that's spent in the technology areas to save.
Yep.
And the other thing is too, teachers, don't underestimate how much teachers with industrial experience can inspire young people to take that on in the future. Okay. And we just don't have those people in education anymore.
All right, good to hear your story as well. Some text messages. Apprenticeships get paid to learn. University, you pay to learn. Why complain? Aside from it driving me bankrupt, I decided against being a Sparky thanks to the union's antics. At 34, I did a full bricklaying apprenticeship with first-year rates of $180 a week. That was hard, but you do get through. Spent my working life training and rebuilding to stay employed here and overseas. Allowed me to navigate emotional times, retrenchments, long-term ill health, and so on, says Sally. Being flexible and constantly reassessing a job market needs help, but not everyone has the energy or personality. The psychology of a flexible approach and portfolio learning and working is what's required, says Sally. Interesting, Nicholas. It's a bad attitude, she says.
I think you need to have skills running in parallel. You need the skills to get the job done, but you constantly need to work on your own skill set. So a couple of callers there. There's this thing called MOOC, or Massive Online Learning, where you can actually brush up at home. It's not a substitute for classroom learning, but it's a way that people can actually see, is this what I want to do? So there's all these opportunities that are out there, but I think people really need to find them, and it's hard to sort out quality. I mean, there's a lot of information out there, and I think you said earlier in the hour that it's pretty tough for people to navigate and work out what's quality, what's one of these fly-by-night courses, what's a quality institution. It's tough.
It sure is. Stephanie in Anglesey, are you finding it tough?
I am. Well, I'm 20. I finished my degree this year, and something that I've noticed from a lot of the callers is there seems to be a lack of skills or a lack of awareness. And I'm just wondering if you ever think that the skills that are required in the working field, aside from academic knowledge, will ever be taught in a high school context.
In a high school context? Okay.
Yes.
Paul?
Well, they are, Stephanie. What strikes me whenever I see a new cohort of students arriving, which is about now, is how well equipped they already are in terms of their communication skills. Truly coming from a European background where we just pale into comparison with how communicative Australian students tend to be. So this basic, the raw material, so to speak, is there. The basic skills are there. It is then harnessing those skills and putting them in the context of your chosen profession, of your chosen education.
Okay. And
well,
Stephanie?
I'm perhaps referring more to the fact that, I mean, I've certainly had a different education experience to many, but something that I've noticed among my peers is the lack of confidence in using those skills and the fact that they find it difficult to perhaps even discern which job offers they're even capable of doing, or they're not even capable of doing an interview. And it's perhaps those skills that I wonder if we could possibly teach a little bit better in our schools.
Okay. Have you got a clear idea of where you want to be heading, Stephanie?
I'm very fortunate in that I've been meeting a few people over the past year, and I'll hopefully have some contact out of that to be able to get a job, but there are certainly others in my course that aren't as fortunate.
I mean, there's a whole lot of kids who are just coming out of whatever form of training they embarked upon, and at the end of it they go, yeah, okay, well, that didn't do much for me. What next? What am I going to do with my life?
Yeah, I certainly have a backup plan of education and trying to teach people, because I think that's an important part of the whole circle of getting jobs and teaching the younger generation. But that can't come immediately, because as the previous caller said, you need experience in the industry before you can truly be a great teacher.
That's the old thing, isn't it? How do you get experience if people will say they want experience before they'll give you a chance to get experience? So round it goes. Good on you, Stephanie. Good luck.
Thank you.
Rebecca Fraser's called in from the Careers Development Association of Australia. How apt, Rebecca. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you all?
I'm very well, and quite fascinated by this area because it's so important to get it right, and I'm not sure that we are.
No, I'd have to say that we're not. My role as the divisional president engages quite extensively with our member base, and we're all really concerned because what we're finding is, A, not being a regulated industry, anyone can call themselves a career coach, including people within training institutes. So the salespeople are being sold off as being career coaches. Here, let us guide you in the next career. But also, we're really concerned about the funding model in being able to provide the right advice at high school level. So we're seeing people coming out of high school moving into university that may not and should not be within the university stream and should be looking at apprenticeships and vice versa. So this is actually what's driving up the attrition rate extensively, and we're really concerned that people that are working within this space don't have the skills and qualifications to actually move forward to the future, and that's with the people providing the advice as well as the people needing the advice. And it is very concerning. There needs to be a greater focus on actually the advice that's being given before even moving within to education.
There's all sorts of issues, though, embedded deep within what you've just said there, Rebecca, and some of the text messages nail it. I've just chucked in teaching science and maths at 39 and gone back to uni to do pharmacy. I'm 24 years old, says this texter. It's Ashley, graduated in 2014 with a Bachelor of Arts degree, English and History, from a good university. Since graduating, I have been unemployed since 2014. Been volunteering, doing admin, tutoring, applied for dozens of jobs, now thinking of going to TAFE to do a Certificate 3 in Aged and Home and Community Care. Maybe that will get me a paid job, says Ashley. My heart goes out to Ashley.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think one of the things is who guided Ashley in what direction she would get once doing that qualification and how to get into that field of work. And that's where the gap is really, really broad across Australia, that people are going into these qualifications, not really sure what they're going to get at the end, but not sure how to grab something at the end. And I know that you've all spoken about it, about the skills and the workforce skills that are needed, but these need to start being taught back within education and not necessarily by teachers. If we're expecting to give people job skills and jobs guidance, it may be that this qualification required to deliver that within schools needs to be different.
All right. Good on you and thank you. It's a great text here. If you're searching for a job, remember to check your spam folder. I missed an interview because I didn't see the email until it was too late. Just little things that might be what makes the difference. 26 minutes to 12 on 774, ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria. John Fain with you on The Conversation Hour today. A forum on the future of jobs. Are we in the middle of a fourth industrial revolution? Professor Paul Kaufman is the Dean of the Faculty of Business and Economics at the University of Melbourne. He does work on the World Economic Forum Future of Jobs study, looking particularly at the attitudes of young people. And our other guest is Nicholas Wyman, the CEO of the Institute for Workplace Skills and Innovation, who's just got a new book that's been published by Allen & Unwin. It's called Job You, Find Your Path to a Successful Career in a Tough Job Market. Rebecca, thank you indeed for your contribution. And John in Port Melbourne, welcome to our forum.
Hi, John. Just calling in, we're a Melbourne software company, and what we do is we actually monitor applications on networks to actually make networks perform better. But as a byproduct, we actually see what all the applications are that staff are using, and we're deployed across the globe. But interestingly, what we're seeing is sometimes from 20% through to, you know, extreme cases, 80% of the network usage of employees can be recreational. So it's quite an interesting statistic that people are at work, but they're actually using the company network so heavily for recreational purposes.
Up to 80%?
Yeah, that was one particular network in Singapore, but we're certainly seeing Australian networks. We did see a Melbourne network of about 350 users where Facebook was turned off, and there was a sort of 30% uplift in worker productivity. So, you know, there's a lot of people in offices around Australia and the world that are certainly using their devices in work time.
Oh, look, and it's been a scourge in this industry in particular. I had harsh words with someone who came in as a casual to work on this program, and the first thing they did when they came in the morning was open Facebook and start sorting out their Facebook. And I said, no, you do that in your time, not our time. We've got a program to make. And we just didn't see the world the same way, and that person wasn't asked to come back as a casual on another occasion. I mean, I think we've all got those sorts of stories to tell, Nicholas. But, yeah, attitudes and young people's attitude to the workplace is crucial to all of this. It's an area you've both worked in.
Yeah, well, I think that as an employer, I'm looking for somebody who comes to my business with an attitude who says, I'm here to learn, and then I'm prepared to invest in that person. And I really say that our small organisation is following the lead of some global companies, Google, Penguin Random House, Ernst & Young. They've all come out in the last week and said, well, Google came out a few months back, but the others came out this week and said, we are changing the way we're bringing people into our workforce. So employers' needs are changing, and I think that one of the people from Random House said there's no simple correlation between having a degree and further professional success. So I think university is a great place if you know that's what you want to do.
All right. And Paul, young people, do they have a different attitude to the whole concept of work that employers need to take into account?
I don't think they got a different attitude from one generation to the next. I don't think it's a generational issue. It is by and large what was just described, a technology issue. I'm always slightly amused when I hear that young people are so technologically savvy. My own nephews want to develop apps on their iPhones, and that doesn't really lead to sustainable employment opportunities. What we see, I think, is that young people are indeed technologically savvy, but they're savvy in ways which aren't necessarily productive. So the 80% is a truly alarming, I think, statistic.
Well, digital natives. So, John, Facebook being turned off, are you seeing that more and more often now on internal work networks?
Yeah, so what we're actually seeing is we allow the network manager to actually see everything that's running on the network, because what's actually happening is the recreational applications are affecting the business ones. So, you know, critical applications, you know, like Skype and, you know, Microsoft Office are being crowded out by Facebook and Instagram. So what actually happens is organisations are now limiting the amount of the network that applications such as Facebook can use, because it is becoming an actual impost on business productivity.
Wow, what an extraordinary thing. So how hard is it to turn off those particular applications on internal devices when people have got their phones and presumably Wi-Fi for their phones on the office Wi-Fi, if they want to get around it anyway?
So our company is actually a network technology company, John. That's what we do. So it actually gets done at the network level. So your network administrator would set protocols within ABC, for example, and say that...
So you can disable the Wi-Fi for Facebook specifically, but it works for everything else.
Yeah, correct. That's right. So we could say, look, Facebook gets, for example, 2% of the company's bandwidth if it's available. And if, for example, there's other more business critical applications that require the bandwidth that, you know, Facebook doesn't get it. And for example, you know, your business critical application does, or they can just go down to the individual user level and say, look, John Fain gets zero Facebook or zero Instagram on all his, on his login, so to speak. Yeah.
I reckon, there's clearly going to be considerable demand for that in the future. Fascinating to get an insight into your business. Thank you.
thanks, John.
Just amazing stuff. There's all sorts of texts. I'll get to them in a moment. Richard from South Gippsland first, though. He's been waiting for ages. Sorry, Richard. Good morning to you.
Yeah, good morning. How are you going?
Good. Welcome.
Yeah, look, I'm a registered builder and also I teach sessional carpentry as well. What I find is a lot of the kids now, they're sort of indoor cats. They actually don't want to go outside in the elements and work and struggle. That's what I'm sort of seeing a lot, because I see both sides, because I've had employed apprentices and also I'm teaching at TAFE. So I've sort of seen both sides of the spectrum.
Well, it's a bit of a generalisation, isn't it, Richard? Are you saying that they're just, well, any different to your generation, where there would have been kids who didn't want to do it either?
Obsessed with their phones. They like to be inside. They don't want to be outside where it's harsh. It might be hot or it might be cold. And they'd rather be inside somewhere where it's air-conditioned.
Okay. Don't want to get their hands dirty, is what you're saying.
Yeah, they don't want to. And I've seen it because I teach it as well, and it's really hard to get the youth motivated, sort of, because they've got a sense of entitlement. They don't believe they have to work for anything. Look, I've done two apprenticeships, and when I was 23, I got out of the one that I was doing to get into building, and I struggled for the first 4 years of my life. But you just have to suck it up sometimes and get on with it.
Okay, let's put that to Paul Kaufman, who does research on global attitudes of young people to the world of work. Does that fit in?
Well, thank you, Richard, for that story. I think that young people are actually sucking it up, so to speak. They just do it in different ways. So you can suck it up just as much internal, in-house, indoors, as you can outside. I think what you're describing is a change of work more generally from hard work. I'm just thinking of the agricultural sector, right? I grew up in a rural part of the Netherlands, and those, I'm talking the early 70s, they were just phasing out, I kid you not, phasing out the horses for tractors. If I look at agricultural enterprise nowadays, if you look at a tractor, it is a very cozy, air-conditioned, comfortable environment for the farmer to work in.
And being replaced by a robot probably soon anyway.
Probably, yes.
So that's the future, in which case the person who makes and programs and supervises and repairs the robot is the person with the job, not the person who used to drive the tractor.
That's right, and I think that we see that happening, in young people are adapting to that, and we perhaps misinterpret that as them not putting in...
So the kid who's playing with computer games and robotic helicopters or whatever, or drones, is the one who's likely to have the skills that...
Well, I think it's got to do with.
We're
talking the last couple of callers. It's all got to do with engagement. I mean, if young people are engaged and curriculum's exciting, so back to the careers call and the previous. If young people are engaged, they're going to excel. So we've got to say, what can we do to get people engaged and keep them engaged?
All right, some text messages and then more callers. I was fortunate I got the job of my dreams at 16 back in 1963, trained by the federal government, a specialist technical job where I stayed for 35 years. The government back then was prepared to spend money to train you, says Mel. I'm always looking for sales reps, any age, as long as you work hard, I'll pay you. Feel free to flick my CV or details on. I'll give you my phone number if you want it. Okay. I took a young person for work experience, says Belinda. They didn't know how to send an email. 15 years old. I then have other young people who don't know how to format a Word document. Digital natives, it's a myth. Mark in Sandringham. Hiya, Mark. Hello, Mark. Hello, Mark. Last call. Are you there, Mark?
Sorry, John. Are you there? Sorry, John.
Just got in.
I just realised here technology is something I tip the butt. John, I'm sitting here and I'm sort of astounded. And there's two levels here. Number one, I'm a builder. I have a large building company. I used to use apprenticeship, people like Southern Group Training and Melbourne Group Training, Squareby. They will ring me and say, Mark, can you take on a couple of first years or second years? This $7.50 thing, I don't know where you guys are getting the figure from. It's $26.50 to take on a first year apprentice. And that's what they charge us an hour, because we have to pay for their week at tech. We have to pay for their on cost is $26.50 an hour. Yep. So I'm paying $26.50 for a boy that's come out of school and he can use a broom.
Yeah, that's the cost to you. But that's not what they are getting paid.
I know, but the problem is, John, so on that basis, I may as well pay $15 more and get a fully qualified carpenter for $40. Do you know what I mean? So what do you do? Do I employ $25 an hour broom sweepers or $40 an hour fully qualified carpenters? And that's the problem. And all of my trades, whether it be plasterers, plumbers, we're all in the same boat. We've got to pay too much for these blokes for what they're worth, if you know what I mean. And I don't I don't know how we're going to build a house in 10 or 15 years because the pull-through is what the gentleman there are talking about. There are no apprentices, and there aren't going to be until that problem gets fixed.
And it's not fashionable, and it's not cool to do it, and we're getting...
Don't get me started with iPads, with texting and boys spending their time texting their mates instead of hammering nails and sweeping floors. That's a whole nother story.
Yeah, and it's health and safety as well, because they're distracted while they're doing dangerous things.
You know, I'm 55. I've been doing this for like 30-something years now since I worked for my father. It's really upsetting to think that there is no pull-through young guys. And you can get a young guy, and I'm ringing these apprentice training guys, people, and saying, well, you've sent me a boy. He hasn't got a car. He can't use transport. He's been late 3 days this week. And I'm paying him the kind of money that I have to pay them for the money to him.
Yeah.
And it's just, John, I don't know where. I don't know what the answer is, but there is a serious, serious problem.
All right. Well, you've helped us identify it. But, Nicholas, what do you think? Is what you're hearing there from our caller Mark in Sandringham what you hear consistently from others?
Well, I think that, you know, you've really got to invest in your future. And by having a skills program, if you haven't got the right partners, find others or do it yourself or do it directly. But I think the other thing, you know, you've touched on something which I was going to mention before. Huge untapped resource. In the UK, 50% of apprentices are female. 50%.
Yep.
Whereas in Australia, it's much, much less than that. It's just around 10%. There's huge opportunity to employ people from underrepresented groups. So maybe cast the net a bit wider. There's some fantastic people out there. So that's what I'd be doing if that was my business. I'd be casting the net as far and wide as I could. Mature age people going back to the high school, starting to really invest in it, because otherwise how are you going to build these houses if you don't have the staff?
Text message from Belinda before about taking on someone who was doing work experience who couldn't send an email. Andrew says, why would a 15-year-old know how to send an email? Email is so old-fashioned. And this whole sector of new-age parents who don't let their kids watch or use technology, how are they going to operate in this high-tech world? Ian from Ashendale says, I've never had access to Facebook through a work server. It's always been blocked, and that's been fine for me. And how do you get into trouble if you're on your Facebook page while you're at work at Facebook, says Nathan in Warrnambool. Someone else here was sending in a text, I've kind of lost it now, saying all my friends now make their income via social media. I've lost the text message, but someone's saying all the young kids I know are actually making their incomes through small businesses and enterprises that are entirely based on social media. So you can't pretend that it's not part of the mix in the future. So let's keep going. Kevin in Williamstown, morning to you. Kevin, welcome to the forum.
Good morning, John. Yes, I've just turned 58. I've been in the workforce 40-odd years. I'm a senior designer in the oil and gas industry, or I was. The companies, the engineering consultants that I've worked with over the years have decided to go overseas, and they've just said they've just walked away from all their local expertise.
Yep.
And I'm at home.
Yep.
It's just...
So you're so specialised, I presume your skills aren't readily transferable to other things.
That is one issue, but the, me personally, I'll survive, but I've got a son in the industry, and he's going to be just basically sent home. It's an absolute joke. This notion of investing in expertise and intellectual property, it's just an absolute joke. The companies have just walked away from their best assets, and they're just going to China and India. It's just appalling.
Well, it might be appalling, it might be dreadful, it might have significant impact on you, but there's no denying that it's happening, Kevin. So
no, that's absolutely true. And I accept, and the companies are quite entitled to do what they want to do.
Sure, and if your son was trained as a carburetor mechanic or a typewriter repairer, when typewriters disappeared and carburetors were replaced with fuel injection, there'd be nothing you could do about that either.
No. I suppose that's all true. We do need to... over the last 40 years of my career, I have continually reinvested in my skill sets. But when a company simply walks away from the very people that have made that company, and say, no, we're now going for the lowest common denominator in China, then it really is a slap in the face for the... and the technology can never, or the expertise will never come back to Australia.
No, no, it's a massive brain drain. And, with the closure of the car manufacturing, we're going to lose even more in the future. It will be something we hear again and again. Kevin, thank you for telling us your story. Warren Moore on Facebook says, bring back the Luddites. I'll get to some more texts in just a moment. Narelle and Echuca on the talkback. Morning, Narelle.
Yes, good morning. I've got a story from the opposite end of the scale. I was 55, 27 years in Victoria Police, and I was diagnosed with PTSD. And to be honest, I didn't think there was much for me. But VicPol helped me a great deal, and I went to a rehabilitation work skills company, and we worked out we identified my skills and what I liked, and it was amazing. I then did a Cert 4 course, which created an enormous amount of opportunities for me, and it all worked out very well for me. And I thought, you know, I could investigate anything, but I didn't know what my skills were, and it identified them. So
what did you turn into, if I can put it that way, Narelle?
Yes, I won't get into that. I did TAFE. I did lecturing in investigative techniques and human rights at TAFE. I'm now a trainer with a training provider called Investigator Upgrade, and I'm a guest speaker. I now talk about my policing career and, you know, what stress can do, and it's just amazing what is identified when you don't really think there's much, you know, God, what can I do after 27 years? It was an incredible change for me, but enlightening.
So you're making a living now?
Well, I'm doing my best, but yes, I am.
Okay.
But it's just going to those skill set people, I went there quite negative thinking, oh, you know, I don't know what I can do, but it identified so many skills that I didn't realise I had.
Okay, interesting. So there, Paul, is a classic example of being nimble and agile, as the Prime Minister recommends.
And I think Narelle hits it right on the head. I think there's a very clear distinction between sometimes, or too often, narrowly defined work experience and the actual skills that the person needed in that particular occupation. If you can tease that out, then the opportunities are there to grab.
All right. It's 8 minutes to 12. We're not going to get through all the callers that are still waiting, but I'll do my very, very best if we possibly can. Wayne in Christmas Hills, good morning to you and thanks for waiting.
Good morning. My son's 19. He's in his final year of an apprenticeship. He, when he was at school, it was slow and he was being treated like a kid and he didn't like it at all. He got into the VCAL and all of a sudden he was treated like an adult and given responsibilities, and he's embraced it with so much enthusiasm. His only regret is that he didn't start a year earlier. And within 2 years, he was giving a huge responsibility in the truck van to drive around. I really think that the teachers and parents are pushing the kids to do year 11 and 12 when it's probably a hindrance to work. My nephew was the apprentice of the year last year for Victoria.
Oh, congratulations. Responsibility you take for that.
I hope there's something there. But anyway, he was encouraged to finish his year 11 and 12. And now, as the apprentice of the year, he's just telling people, forget about it, year 11 and 12. It's a waste of time. Get into it when you're young and enthusiastic. You'll carve an excellent career for yourself.
Good to hear from you, Wayne. Maria in Kew before we get back to our experts. Hi, Maria.
Oh, hi, John. I just wanted to make a quick comment in response to the gentleman who called in earlier claiming that, you know, young people were afraid to get their hands dirty. I have to say, as a recent graduate of commerce at Melbourne Uni, actually, I, throughout my degree, had to work for free in an internship 2 days a week and while studying full-time as well. And it makes me a little bit upset that people think that we don't work hard. I don't have any friends that haven't worked summer upon summer while studying in order to be able to actually even get a job when we graduate. I was lucky enough to, you know, be offered a job through my internship, but I know a lot of people that even through the hard work don't get anywhere after we graduate, even with amazing marks. So I just sort of wanted to put it in perspective from a 21-year-old's point of view.
No, that's great.
That we do actually work really hard. It might not be the hard graft that, you know, previous generations perceive as hard graft, but, you know, we do work really hard. I just needed to make sure everyone knew that.
Great to hear that, and thank you. And Nola in Mount Martha wants us to know about her son. He did a motor mechanics apprenticeship when he finished, joined a V8 team, then went to Europe, did several Paris-Dakar rallies as a technician, travelled the world with the race team, now speaks fluent German and does overseas training programs for Ford throughout Southeast Asia, started out as a mechanic apprentice. It can take you far if you stick at it. Nola from Mount Martha is basically saying, if you love doing it and you're good at it and you become the best at it, you'll always be in demand, which is one of the messages, Nicholas, in the book. Choose something you
that's
don't
an awesome. That is an awesome story.
Yeah, throw yourself into it, whatever
and
it
I
is.
Think it's, you know, how can we get this person to come and talk to school students and say, here's opportunities. That's what we need more of. We need to look at ways of making our high schools innovative, and the curriculum's got to be relevant, and say these are the pathways. And I don't think it should be your choice is left to university or right to vocational. Have it all. You can have it all. But it's the right education at the right time.
And there's a point also in there, Paul, about teachers needing to stay current and still teach in a way that's relevant for the changed circumstances. Updating teachers' skills is a big part of it too.
And there's no hiding anymore. We operate in a global environment. Education truly is global. It's got its problems in verifying the quality. But nonetheless, we have to keep up with the times, and we do. So we invest in secondments of our staff in industry that being rooted in the profession that you teach about. That all those kinds of skills and the changes to curriculum, MOOCs were mentioned before. I've done one of those MOOCs. We are increasingly adapting our curriculum for the times.
All right, and finally, in closing, if there was one change that you could make from your experience overseas in particular, one change you could make to the Australian training system, what would it be?
I'd love to see internships change in nature. What happens at the moment is internships are provided in my particular profession in financial institutions with the mere purpose of selecting the very best students. It should be different. It should be a training exercise. It should be an opportunity for both the student and the organization that is providing the internship to actually deliver an educational experience for those students.
Professor Paul Kaufman, who's the Dean of the University of Melbourne's Faculty of Business and Economics. He's the Sydney Meyer Chair of Commerce and works on the World Economic Forum study on attitudes of young people. Nicholas, if there was one change that you could make and you could introduce to the Australian vocational training system.
I think it's really around this idea of collaboration and partnerships. I mean, we need to, there's no use blaming young people. No use blaming young people at all and saying they're lazy or whatever the situation is. We need to engage the next generation of workers, and we really need to look at partnerships between education, industry and the community.
And so many more text messages as well. My partner's just finished an environmental degree, says Kelly. Walked into a dream job. 8 years of study starting at TAFE, finishing at uni. It's finally paid off. At 40, he's looking forward to the next stage of his career. Unlike most graduates, he now has 20 years of work experience to complement his degree. And advice for a young person looking for a career change, away from retail, but no idea what they want to do, not afraid to go back and study. Are there any resources for them? Well, one thing you could do would be to get hold of Nicholas's book. Did you like the way I did that?
Fantastic.
Oh, so good. It's called Job You, Find Your Path to a Successful Career in a Tough Job Market. Nicholas Wyman. It's published by Allen and Unwin, and he's been one of our guests with Professor Paul Kaufman from the University of Melbourne on a fascinating forum where we've learned a lot today. Claire Bowditch, good morning to you.
Good morning, John.
Speaking of career changes.
I've got a couple of people coming in today who have made their own career. We'll be speaking with Gina Riley, my apologies, which will be exciting. She has so many different guises. What an incredible actress. Also, we're going to talk about idols, John. Marilyn Monroe.
Oh, those sorts of idols.
What do you think? Who's yours?
Male and female?
Mm-hmm.
I don't worship at fallen idols.
So. How about you guys?
Yeah.
Who are your educational idols?
Oh.
Paul?
Educational idols.
I haven't given you much time to think through. Maybe get back to me.
That's too hard a question. Tomorrow's harder.
I like a German professor by the name of Felix Rauner from the University of Bremen. He's written some very, very clever things on apprenticeships, and he doesn't have a computer.
Serves you right for asking. Claire Bowditch with you on the radio this afternoon. Nicholas Paul, thank you both very much for coming on 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria. It's been a fascinating conversation. Now it's news time now at 12 noon.